Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, everybody. Our next conversation deals with some adult themes. That's it. I just wanted you to know, in case there are little ones around and you'd rather have these kinds of conversations on your own time schedule. So now would be a good time to pop in some earbuds or maybe check this out later on demand. When author Melissa Phoebos was 10 years old, she liked to play with a neighborhood boy named Alex. When she was around 11, Melissa hit puberty and her body changed quickly. People noticed. Men noticed. Alex noticed. He started chasing her around the bus stop and spitting on her once they got on the bus. Melissa tried to take the spitting in stride, masking her pain by trying to spit back, pretending to be in on the joke. But one day, just before Alex was about to spit on her, Melissa broke down in tears. "I'm sorry," the boy said. "It's not because I don't like you. I do." That was an awakening for Melissa, who began to realize, quote, "desire led to fear that could lead to hate, all without ever obliterating that original want." That story and its lesson kick off Melissa's latest collection of essays called Girlhood. Part memoir, part history, part cultural investigation and analysis, the book examines the messages girls absorb as young at a young age about their body, their sexuality, their relationship with men, and their agency. Kirkus Review says Girlhood, quote, "transforms the wounds and scars of lived female experience into an occasion for self-understanding that is both honest and lyrical." Melissa Phoebos is the author of another collection of essays and a memoir, Whip Smart, about her time as a sex worker. She's now an associate professor at the University of Iowa, and she joins me now. Melissa, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Allison. Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, we want to get you in on this conversation. What's a lesson you learned or a message you received in girlhood that you're trying to unlearn? What's difficult about that unlearning process? Give us a call at 646-435-7280. What is a lesson you learned or message you received in girlhood that you're trying to unlearn? And what's been difficult about that unlearning process? 646-435-7280. Or you can always tweet to us at @allofitwnyc. So the question I'm asking our listeners, I want to ask you, Melissa, what is a lesson you learned in girlhood that you have been trying to unlearn or that has taken the longest to unlearn? Mm-hmm.
It's a really good question. I mean, the first thing I thought was, well, I had to write a book to name all of them. There are so many. But I'll speak to one that was really one of the most transformative experiences of writing I've ever had in my life, was writing an essay about this particular lesson. And that lesson is that it is easier and in some ways better or preferable to compromise my bodily integrity to meet someone else's desire, which is to say, it's better to do something I don't want to do than to suffer someone else's disappointment or frustration.
And it's really, I'm so glad you said that, because I was going to wait to talk about some of the essays you wrote about cuddle parties. But I think this ties directly to what you just said. Mm-hmm. You have these essays in your book titled "Thank You for Taking Care of Yourself," which centers around something called a cuddle party and this idea of skin hunger. Mm-hmm. Can you describe what a cuddle party is and what drew you into attending one, especially given your last answer?
Sure. I mean, I will say that I wrote this essay before the pandemic, and it sort of hits a little bit differently now that everyone knows what skin hunger is, both as a term and in their bodily experience. But my experience, and this was back in 2017 or 18, a friend of mine sent me a link to something called a cuddle party and said, "Oh, this seems like something you would be curious about." And I read the description, and the description of a cuddle party is basically what I sort of assumed when I first read it or heard the term, which is that it's kind of like a cuddle orgy. It's not a sexual event, but it is a physical event, and there's a great emphasis at cuddle parties put on affirmative consent and boundaries and sort of bodily integrity and about sort of meeting a physical need for comfort and contact without transgressing the boundaries of our own bodies and our own desires or other people's bodies. And when I read about it, I thought, this sounds like an amazing idea. It also gave me a very deep sort of instinctual cringe that I have come to understand means that there's a trigger somewhere in me that's related to my own experience that I am not fully aware of, and I should probably go figure out what it is. So I did.
And in this, it's interesting. You write, so the idea is that, you know, people are asked if they can cuddle, that the idea you get some sort of comfort, and you're supposed to say no. And if you say no, the other person is supposed to say, thank you for taking care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And you write, I felt unnerved by the cuddle party. And it wasn't just those men asking. It was how powerful my instinct was to give them what they wanted as if I didn't have a choice. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that instinct to consent is difficult to overcome?
Well, that was sort of the question that set me off on writing this very long essay. It became almost like a mystery I wanted to solve, except I was searching for clues in my own mind and in my own life, because I was, you know, 37-year-old, basically lifelong feminist, at a cuddle party where we had practiced role-playing, saying no, and it was encouraged, and I still agreed to cuddle with people that I didn't want to cuddle with. And I was just like, how did this happen? So I went back over the course of my whole life, and what I found, Allison, was it was one of those things that was both incredibly shocking and not shocking at all. And this is like how I greet a lot of the news I hear on NPR, right? It's like, ugh. And I went back through my life and I saw that I had been doing this my entire life, and that it had in fact been encouraged my entire life from sort of, you know, and I have parents that actually weren't sort of forcing me to hug other people, but there's just a way, it's rude to not shake someone's hand. It's rude not to hug back a friendly acquaintance that I don't actually really like. It's awkward when you're making out with someone at 12 years old to stop them and say, hey, I actually want to stop here. You know, like that is not, we weren't role-playing that in sex ed when I was an adolescent, right? And so I had this whole lifetime of tolerating and accepting and kind of smiling through experiences of touch that I wasn't actually comfortable with and sort of stuffing my real feelings about it. And so then I arrive at the cuddle party at 37, and it's like I've been training for it my whole life, from sort of early sexual experiences to, like, you know, interrupting my own plans because someone else wants to have a coffee and pick my brain about something. And, you know, these things don't seem similar, but I started to really connect the dots of all the ways in my life I was saying yes when I actually wanted to say no. And when I started talking to other people, friends of mine, and then acquaintances, and then friends of theirs, and then strangers, mostly women, it turned out that we all had. And, you know, It was life changing and sort of mind blowing, and I knew I had to write about it.
My guest is Melissa Phoebos. We're talking about her new book, Girlhood. Let's take a couple of calls. Nicole on line 4 is calling in from Queens. Hi, Nicole. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, and thank you for having this important discussion. I'm a mom of 4. I have 3 sons and a daughter at the end. And my whole goal for them is that they don't have to unlearn lessons in adulthood that I've had to unlearn in adulthood, but especially for my daughter. And the biggest one that I've had to unlearn has been that I'm allowed to take up bodily space. And the only time I ever felt like my body was worthy of taking up space was when I was pregnant. And it was a lesson I learned very young, that being small and bodily insignificant was a better way to be and a safer way to be, both sexually and just physically, than being big and being womanly. So that's something, even as a 40 and a half-year-old woman, I'm still trying to unlearn, and it's a lesson I really hope my daughter and my sons as well never have to unlearn.
Nicole, thank you for calling in. Melissa, you write a lot about your relationship with the body, with your body during puberty, the way people make assumptions about the body. I'm curious your response to Nicole's call and anything else you wanted to share about thinking about girls' bodies and what culture
tells them. Sure. I mean, you know, first of all, I just want to thank Nicole for her candor and also just for raising these children and sending them into our society with these lessons that they can take up space. And I'm thinking of your daughter, Nicole, but also your sons, you know, because demonstrating for boys that it's okay for all of us to take up space and to respect and admire and support other people, but to watch you telling your daughter that she can take up space is also teaching them that the girls and women in their life can take up space, and the power of that is just immeasurable. So just like as a person living in American society, I thank you for that. And I just, you know, I want to say it's, you know, taking up space both sort of in the social spaces that I move through, but also in my own body, that it's okay to take up space and like have a strong space taking up body is also something beautiful and to be proud of. It's been a life's work for me, you know, so I'm also 40 and a half. and I'm just in awe of anyone who even gets to our age and has enough of it to give away to your children. So I just commend you and I thank you. And I'm in this project with you.
Let's go to Chrissy calling in from Brooklyn. She's on line two. Hi, Chrissy. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me. It was really interesting. I thought, you know, when I hit puberty, all of a sudden, all the attention was what I was wearing, what I was doing. I hit puberty really early and was a pretty bigger girl. So there was so much focus on what you wore to school, what you wore to this place, what you wore to that place, where and who you were wearing it with. And it just got into my head that your clothes determine other people's actions towards you and how you will be treated. And it took a really long time to think, like, I shouldn't wear this skirt because I'm not going to be safe. I should wear this because I will look professional and smart. And I think, or even just like using covering your femininity because that might be a trigger, I think is a big thing that people try and unlearn when they hit puberty. And women, especially in girls.
Chrissy, thank you so much for calling in. Yeah, you have this, you write about this quite a bit in your book, Melissa, and you write, around the time of puberty, my mother brought home a book called The What's Happening to My Body Book for Girls. It did not explain why being the only girl on the basketball team no longer felt like a triumph. It did not explain why grown men in passing cars, to whom I had always been happily invisible, now leered at me. It did not explain why or even acknowledge that what was happening to my body changed my value in the world. Mm-hmm. Huh. So how had you been perceiving your body before then? And then what was sort of a moment when you knew things were going to be different and it was going to be a little bit out of your control?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I identify so much with our caller. I was this very sort of athletic, you know, smart, like very confident kid. And then I also developed early, like 10 or 11, my chest started developing and I was the only kid in my class, the only girl in my class who was developing early. And, you know, over the course of writing this book, I did a lot of research and read a lot of studies and now understand that it was pretty much guaranteed that I was going to have a harder experience as a result of that. But it was, you know, this thing where suddenly I was going from being measured the same way that all the other kids were and that all the boys were being measured by how fast I was and how strong I was and how confident I was and how well I did it in my homework or whatever, to suddenly my value being this kind of sexual attention and my ability to modulate it, right? So, and our caller's talking about this, sometimes it seemed like I was being instructed to sort of exploit or perform a sort of sexy image of femininity. And sometimes it seemed like my job was to conceal it or hide it. And if I messed up, I was punished for it socially. And it seemed, you know, this is called a double bind, but I didn't know what that was. You know, a double bind just sounded like the double sports bras I started wearing to hide my chest when I was a kid so that I could keep playing sports without feeling humiliated. And, you know, I'll say a good example for me is, you know, the one you brought up earlier about sort of being spat on by that kid in my neighborhood. And it was like I understood in this really inchoate way that he was kind of attracted to me and provoked by my body in some way that made him want to hurt me or to sort of dominate. And I had no words for this. It felt unspeakable in like a literal way. But what I did understand was that I was responsible for managing it and I had failed somehow. And like, I think this is true of most of the women I know. If I could go back in time and take back all of the energy, all of the thoughts, all of the obsessing and writing in my journal and blaming myself, all of the energy that I put into trying to control other people's response to my body, who knows what else I could have achieved in my life and how much more joy I could have gotten out of my body, out of my pleasure. You know, I just, in many ways, this book, Girlhood, is about sort of reclaiming that space, reclaiming my own body, and trying to create a conversation for other women to talk about that experience.
I'd like to check in with a dad who is called in. His name is Hasha. He's on line 3, and he's looking for a little bit of guidance, a sounding board. Hasha, thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, thank you very much, and I really appreciate this opportunity. Thank you for taking the call. I'm 64. My wife is in her high 50s. We did not grow up in the U.S. You know, we are from India originally, so a different culture. And we have a 31-year-old daughter who's very smart, quite beautiful, and quite accomplished. She's a doctor, and yet suffers from social anxiety issues and I think low self-esteem. And the reason I'm calling is I just wanted to share this and tell you what our perspective is and get your advice on what you think is the appropriate way to deal with this. You know, she was a perfectly outgoing, charming, bright, vivacious girl until she went to middle school. So maybe around the time she was about 10, 11 years old, there was some mild bullying. You know, as far as we could tell, nothing really extraordinary. But I don't know if she shared everything with us. So, you know, can't really be 100% sure of that. But to the extent we can judge, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And then in high school, she became a little more withdrawn. And the undergrad experience was not very pleasant for her. And now she's gone through med school, gone through residency, is quite a successful doctor. But I think we, to the extent we can determine, she's still struggling with these issues.
Sure.
You know, quite stressed and unnecessarily puts on weight.
Yeah.
So just wanted, and we hesitate to go to a psychiatrist because I think they're very quick to put people on medication.
Sure.
You know,
Let me dive in here and get Melissa's response, maybe some guidance you can offer, some context maybe for this father that might be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And thank you for calling in. I'm really moved to sort of hear you speaking about your daughter's experience and to hear your concern. It's clear that you're a very loving parent, and you've really done well by her. I do want to say, like, first off, that anxiety disorders may or may not have to do with folks' experience in middle school. For me, it certainly did, but definitely that is also a burden that strikes people who had perfectly happy middle school experiences. I will say that the things that I write about in this book are very much, in many ways, the story of me going back exactly to that time in life and thinking, you know, on the outside, I had a really good childhood. I had a really happy experience. I had loving parents. I would have been described very similarly to your daughter. And there was this thing that happened in middle school where my body changed and I was horribly sexually harassed. And because of sort of that dynamic of being encouraged to consent to things I didn't want. I had sexual experiences I didn't want. And these are experiences that don't qualify as assault or really abuse, not by the way we typically talk about them, but they were really damaging and they really sort of affected who I was and how I related to my body and other people and social life longitudinally. And these are things that, you know, my parents only know about because I'm a writer. I would never have spoken to them about it, not because they wouldn't have helped me. They would have immediately helped me, but because the mechanism of feeling ashamed and feeling culpable for our own sort of victimization kicks in so quickly that I would have been absolutely mortified to ever speak about it to anyone. And in many ways, talking about this book is the first time I ever have talked about these experiences. And so, you know, I do strongly recommend psychotherapy, which is very different from psychiatry. I have been greatly served by therapy. And for me, it was really important to have someone I could talk to before I could talk to my parents, or maybe in lieu of ever talking to my parents, but sort of saying the words aloud, like, you know, when it was invented, they called it the talking cure. So it's a really good starting place, but so is putting words to it through journaling, through writing, naming the experiences, and acknowledging the ways that they affected me was utterly transformative to sort of my anxiety, my self-esteem, all of those things. So I would say talking about it in whatever space feels safe to her is a great place to start.
My guest is Melissa Phoebos. The name of the book is Girlhood. Melissa, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it, and I think a lot of people get a lot out of reading your book.
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for creating space for this conversation, Allison.